Welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin. And we are turning towards life again. This week, we've got a really wonderful source from Justin. If you're new here and you haven't conned on yet, we alternate who chooses our source. So every 2 weeks, one of us gets to choose what we're going to bring as a kind of starting point for a goodness knows what kind of conversation that's live and unrehearsed and unplanned. And we will bring that every week and be here every week by hook or by crook, as we say. And so far, we've done this for almost 6 years, which is quite something. Justin just told me, everybody, that next week is our sixth birthday, which is really bonkers. And we're just really grateful for this whole thing. I'm grateful for you, Justin, that we keep showing up and keep doing this. And we're different than when we started, because in 6 years, obviously, much changes. So it's very bonkers that we're here. And thank you, everybody, for being here with us. And thank you, Justin, for this beautiful source that you've chosen for us today.
Thank you, Lizzie. We'll talk. I imagine we'll talk next week about how long 6 years is and what that's like. I'm going to resist the temptation to say anything about it yet. So I don't want to save it up. But welcome, everybody. It's really good to be with you again, Lizzie, and to have this conversation again. To all of you who are with us, thank you for joining us if you're new, or staying with us if you've been with us for a long time. And I think I want to say again, Lizzie, this week, that this whole project got born out of Third Space that we're part of, and we thought of it as a way of bringing the kinds of conversations on the things that we get to talk about in all the things we do in the world of Third Space out into the world, as well as having them, you and I, more and more. So if you're interested, any of you who are with us, in the kinds of coaching we do and coaching programs and all the other things that we're up to, you can always head along to wearethirdspace.org and have a look. And we've actually got some things coming up online very soon this month, September, and in November, that you can join from anywhere in the world. And the other thing just to say is, if you feel like you benefit from this conversation, one of the ways that you can support us is by and other people is by sharing it with other people. You can tell them about the podcast or point them towards the turningtowards.life website, because there's no doubt, I know you and I, Lizzie, talk how often about how meaningful it is to feel like we're having a conversation that's of benefit to us, but also knowing that it reaches others. And every now and again we meet someone who says, oh, someone introduced me to this, and here's the ways in which it's touching me, or the ways in which it's helpful. So you're all very welcome to do that. So the source, as always, you can find it in the notes for the podcast. You can find it on turningtowards.life. You can find it on our Instagram, where all these conversations also go. And you can find it in the Turning Towards Life Facebook group, which you're always all very welcome to come and join. And we published the source a couple of days before. And this one, Lizzie, so Bachir ibn Pakuda, who wrote this, was writing in about the 12th century. And what I didn't reproduce, but I'll say before I read this, is that this little bit about forgetting comes after a whole bit about remembering, where he writes about the importance of memory and how without the right kind of memory, it's really hard for us to be the ones that we are. If we can't remember what we're committed to, or what and who we care about, or what we're in the midst of, or what we've pointed ourselves towards, or what we're wanting to bring about in the world, or how we got to be the ones that we are today. And I think it's important to know that, because after this long and very beautifully written, hymn to memory, he reminds us of this, and this is where this begins. Forgetting has its uses. Were it not for our ability to forget, we would never be free from melancholy. No joyous occasion would dispel sadness. The events that delight us would give us no pleasure while we recalled every trouble of life. Even from the success of our hopes, we could not expect to derive rest and peace of mind. We would never refrain from grieving. So both memory and forgetfulness, different and contrary as they are both gifts given to us, and each of them has its uses in our lives.
The gift of forgetting. Forgetting has its uses. Were it not for our ability to forget, we would never be free from melancholy. No joyous occasion would dispel sadness. The events that could delight us would give us no pleasure, while we recalled every trouble of life. Even from the success of our hopes, we could not expect to derive rest and peace of mind. We could never refrain from grieving. So both memory and forgetfulness, different and contrary as they are both gifts given to us, and each of them has its uses in our lives.
I've been thinking this week, Lizzie, about the relationship of memory and forgetting to the things that hurt us, and particularly to the people that hurt us, like we all inadvertently hurt one another, or sometimes purposefully hurt one another over time. I've been thinking about how easy it is to hold on very tightly to things that we would be much, it would be much better for us if we could find a way to let them go a little, or to let them go a lot, or to let them go completely. And I think that one way of thinking about what Bhakya Ibn Pakuda is bringing us here is, it's an invitation to letting go.
Mm.
It's an invitation to letting things not be present right at the front with us all the time. And I think that that's what he's writing about. You can imagine a world where every single experience was like right at the front all the time. And every time you experience something, it just stayed and built up. But pretty soon you'd be in this wall, maybe of many joys, but also of grudges and resentments and fears. And so there's definitely a place for remembering things. There are things to remember, gifts and blessings, as well as injustices that need to be righted and all of that. But when I hear you read this, I go, thank goodness for forgetting.
Mm.
No, thank goodness I'm not always caught up in the same intense feeling that I had when I read that email that attacked me. Thank goodness I'm not always caught up in the memory of that moment where I felt let down by somebody. Thank goodness I'm not always caught up in the memory of how painful it was to fall over and hurt my arm or to be really ill. I'm really grateful that I don't have all of those right at the front, and that sometimes there's an enormous freedom that comes from not remembering it at all. And by extension, and I think this is where I've got super interested in this, is thank goodness I don't remember all the habits I had at different points in my life, all the sort of preoccupations, all the obsessions, all of the certainties, all of the things that I keep on doing that keeps my world very small. Thank goodness it is possible to forget those too, or at least to give them space, which I think is probably the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if it seems to me that there's a way of thinking about it that, to an extent, our capacity to unfold into our lives, to grow or develop in any way, has to involve this balance of memory and forgetting. Because if I don't remember, then who am I, and how is there any thread to my life, and how do I learn anything? But if I don't forget, how do I ever stop just being the same one that goes round and round and round and round in a tiny circle? So maybe all of our growing and all of our becoming ourselves is both memory and forgetting all the time.
Mm. Oh goodness, there's so much bubbling up for me. I feel like a big theme that emerges out of this. Firstly, just to say, a thought that comes and in this moment as you're speaking is that I'm obviously spending lots of time, as you know, Justin, with like 3 and 4 year olds at the moment. And this gift of forgetting is profoundly present all the time. Like when there's a spat of some kind or people fall out with one another, literally 2 minutes later, should we play ball? Like, and each time in my body, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is how to not have like residue. This is how to let go. Like, what can these ones teach me about the simplicity of just moving on? And each time it kind of gets me because I'm so much less capable of that kind of letting go than these little ones are. And so I'm feeling very taught and inspired and given the example of what it means to really move on quickly and let go and be almost instantaneously forgiving once the feelings of injustice have passed. It's no longer necessary to hang on to the thing that just happened, like my thing got stolen or somebody whacked me or whatever the thing is. And so I'm in this consistent kind of marveling, and my body still hasn't caught up with it, if you know what I mean. I'm like, oh gosh, is it going to be tricky next time or whatever? No, it's not tricky. It's just a simple, straightforward letting something go. So I'm really amazed by that and moved by it every time. And what I expect to happen, what my projection is of what's going to happen, is always completely wrong in that realm. And I love that. And so I'm feeling very led and inspired to kind of cultivate that in myself, the kind of straightforwardness of just letting something pass and go and then meeting somebody afresh 2 minutes later. What is that? The other thing that comes to me as you're saying all of this and we're reading this source is about, like you're saying already, there's this inherent relationship between memory and forgetting, because the more I can remember about what I'm trying to cultivate in my life, the more I can forget the things that don't contribute to that in some way. And so I've been really considering this idea of being fully present to and acknowledging, which I can't not do anyway, like whatever wounds I have and whatever triggeredness and reactivity I'm in and whatever defensiveness, like really holding that and allowing healing to happen and all of that. But at the same time, remembering that that can take up every piece of space in my life. And what space and energy am I giving to the creation of the life that, or the relationships or the arrangement of circumstances that I really truly desire in my life? And what is the proportionality between those two things? Because it's kind of, I think I've been caught up in a narrative before of healing being the route to freedom or something. And of course, there's profound value in that. But I don't think it can be held alone. I feel like I have to also create my life at the same time as addressing my past and my wounds and my history. And of course, that belongs really profoundly in my life. But there's space for more than that. There's space for creation. There's space for cultivation. There's space for intentionality. And I think both of those things together feel really important. And I think some of us are prone towards one side or the other, if you know what I mean. And then to notice which is my preference and to realize which is getting short shrift and which one I could hold with more power, that I can notice how much energy is being taken up with the stories and the processing of things versus how much is actually contributing towards cultivation and creation. And that feels like a really big question for me at the moment. And one that, you know, in a marriage, for example, how much are we focused on all the kerfuffles and the arguments and the difficulties and the partnership? When what if me creating my life and my presence, like cultivating who I want to be in the world, might be the best thing I could do for my marriage? And so I feel really, same with parenting or having a business or being friends with someone. It's, for me anyway, my pattern is it's much, much easier to get sucked into the the drama and the story and the what is there to do about it and how could we fix this and what needs to be done. And then it means that the other part gets kind of squirreled away and I don't focus on it enough and I don't give it enough value to say, well, I'm going to put the problems down for a minute and I'm going to look at the grace that's available and the creativity that's available to really build this sense of the life that's mine.
I'm really taken by this distinction you're making, Lizzie, about the way in which remembering and forgetting can be a deliberate act. Like there's the kind of memory and forgetting that we don't have very much control over. Things that we remember that we might rather we didn't because they're painful or they're, and the things that we forget that we wish we remembered. I have lots of those, you know, finding myself forgetting something important about another person that I care about, wishing I'd remembered it, or the more prosaic things of, you know, forgetting my keys or forgetting my hat or, you know, all those kind of things. But that, what you said was, I think the way I understood it was, one of the things that we might remember is what we're up to in the world, what we're committed to in the world. That's important to remember. Like, here's the kind of person that I intend to be.
Mm.
Here are the kind of qualities that I intend to cultivate. And here's the kind of identity that I want to make. And here's the kind of life and relationship that I want to make. Those are really, really important remembrances because they keep us in contact with life flowing through. And that remembering that might come with a kind of very choiceful forgetting. And I love the way you know, when you were talking about 3 and 4 year olds who seem so often, given the right circumstances, ready to re-meet one another afresh. Like, oh, it's Lizzie. Oh my goodness. I wonder who you are. And let's begin again. That kind of very, what might be sort of instinctual, forgetting for them might be something that we really helps us to cultivate, because no matter what's happened between me and you that we need to address and we need to remember, we need to repair from, one of the things I might be remembering about you is sort of holding on to a way that you were yesterday as if that was you, or holding on to a way I was yesterday as if that was me. Like I'm sort of remembering something and making it central when it's not. And I always loved, there's a line in a book by Wendy Palmer, which you might know, where she talks about remembering that when you come home at the end of the day, if that's the pattern of your day, that the people you come home to at the end of the day are different to the ones that you left in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
There may be this line of remembrance, but they're also different. All kinds of things have happened. And so I really appreciating this combination of remembering what we want to grow, what we want to attend to, what is sacred to us, and forgetting all the things that we hold on to that don't allow for the flow of life. And that would be a way of distinguishing between the two. And I was thinking before, is, you know, about habits I've had or preferences I've had, or, you know, maybe in a way what we're talking about is just occurring to me is we're talking about remembering the things that are really fundamental and forgetting the things that are superficial and fly away. And that our mistake is when we forget the things that are fundamental and we remember the things that are trivial and change. And that, and when we do it that way round, we lose contact with ourselves and our own capacities, and we get caught, that's when we get caught up in resentments and meetable expectations of ourselves and other people, and grudges and certainty and all of those kind of things. So it feels to me like a sort of a guideline for what kind of things to remember and what kind of things to practice forgetting would be very, very helpful indeed.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting, Justin, to feel like there's categories of things to forget and categories of things to remember. And yeah, I still feel really taken by both of these things being next to one another. Like the more I remember in those categories, who you really are, Justin, the easier it is for me to forget the things that I just don't need to worry about. The more I can see you, the more I can value your essential goodness, the easier it is for me to let go of those things. And of course, the more I consciously let go of the things I don't need to be recycling in my mind, the easier it is to see you and remember who you are. So I'm really struck by these things not being separate from one another. And also, I'm really appreciating your distinction between forgetting and letting go. And almost, to me, it seems like there's an intentionality in letting go. And sometimes letting go just happens and you go, oh, well, I've let that go, but I didn't realize I had. But there seems to me an invitation to intentionality in the letting go realms, and remembrance. Yes, there's some things that are a given that I remember, like people's random phone numbers from when I was 16, people's landlines. Those are just there in my memory. And then there are things that I really don't remember. And that's that part that's kind of habitual remembrance and memory, if you like. But then there's the reconnection with what's true about someone, or the reconnection with the essence of something, the goodness of something, the reality of someone's gifts or something, that seems like, again, is an invitation for intentional. There's an intentional part of that that feels really important, which enables my life, the way that I can make decisions to recall something. I can sit down with a journal and I can say, right, I'm going to write down all of the things that I was grateful for today. That's a really different thing than just relying on my habitual remembering and forgettingness of what just happened in my day. And so that I can create a day with an intentional remembrance is a very different life than just being a kind of victim of the way I remember and forget things in that habitual phone number kind of way. And those two being right next to one another, of what am I remembering intentionally and what am I forgetting intentionally, seem really important to all my relationships and who I want to be in the world. And also centering my own life. You know, I don't know if this is a story that's common to lots of people, but I think a lot of women probably feel this, because this is our social kind of role, is everyone else. It's classic. It's already happened today. You know, my husband and my daughter are out on a bike ride and I've got a child dressed and sorted her out and everything. And 10 minutes before this, I'm still in my nightie and haven't got myself organized at all. So it's present in my life all the time, because of the way things roll and who mothers get to be and the, you know, things we take up. And so if I don't remember my own essence, my own centralness in my life, it might just disappear.
That's exactly the kind of remembrance. I'm really appreciating the nuance of our conversation, because it would be easy to hold up as if one was better than the other. And there's this intimate dance of purposeful, of instinctual remembering and forgetting, and purposeful remembering and forgetting for us to hold on to. I was thinking what you evoked in me when you said that was, yes, feeling very touched by this sense that in the midst of the identities and the roles that we've taken on, or which our culture has asked of us, and we found ourselves in, how important it is to remember that we're not our roles and we're not our identities. We are in part, but there's always something that's not that, something that didn't get recognized in whatever role that we're in. And in a way, one of the kinds of forgettings that can be such a blessing are the times when we forget the role, we forget that we have a role, we forget about ourselves as man or woman or wife or husband or mother or father or son or daughter or any of them. There are, of course, there are lots of other identities that I'm not even including here in laying them out that way. Sometimes when we can even momentarily forget those identities, we get to remember something else that's true about us. Which is why having practices and people who will remember us beyond our roles is so important, which is not so different to having people around us who will remember us past the mistake that we made yesterday or the thing that we did that was hurtful or selfish or not paying attention, who will remember. So we need other people to remember us and to forget us, just as we remember ourselves and forget ourselves at the same time. And what's really coming to me in this conversation for the first time is this sense of, I think I've thought a lot, Lizzie, about purposeful remembering. I think of these two I've sort of had remembering be the one. And I'm thinking about all the ways that we need memory to correct injustices. You know, it's not okay to just forget an injustice against a person or a people we need memory for all kinds of things. But I don't think I've really thought that much about how I might really in a sort of attend to the sacredness, the holiness of forgetting. And know when I'm caught up in, you know, for example, if I'm caught up in very strong feelings of hurt that's come from someone else, come from an interaction with someone else, maybe that's something to be remembered because there's an injustice or an unkindness to be corrected. But maybe it's to be forgotten so that when I walk into the room, I'm not consumed by the thing that's here between us. And there's a sort of a relational choices to be made here. Sometimes when we forget, when we allow ourselves to forget our roles, we can meet one another in a much deeper way than we otherwise would. And great healing is possible, and great seeing is possible, and great receiving is possible, and great knowing is possible, and great wonder is possible. And if we meet one another as if I meet you not as my friend, but I meet you as some great mystery, or if I meet someone I've been in a relationship for a long time, not as the person that I'm familiar with, but as someone completely unknown. If I meet my child, not with all of our history, but with eyes of wonder, that kind of, maybe one way of saying it is that the sort of ordinariness, the habitualness, the everydayness of our relationships, we can dive deep below the surface of those to the extent that we're willing to forget, at least for a while, everything that we knew.
I was just thinking, Justin, that also those things don't feel like absolutes to me. Like I can walk in a room having had a go at letting go and trust that my having had a sense of letting go will make me different in the moment of remembering. Like if I know what it is to stand in a place of having let go, I'm going to be different with you than if I've just held on to my thing for the whole time. And I haven't done my best to process and really move beyond the story that I have about you. The story may come back again when I face you again, because there was some injustice or some untruth or some difficulty between us. But if I've held you in a space that's not that, just for a little while, even, my story's got less grip. And as we all know, the truth is different for you as it's different for me. Like any argument I've ever had is defined by the fact that I've experienced it differently than you have. And so if I can come to the party with a little bit of letting go-ness in myself, the likelihood of it being not so difficult as it was before is much greater. And it's not going to solve the problem or make everything go away. But who I bring myself as into the room is difficult when I've stood in the let go place versus having held on to that position the whole time. And if I haven't addressed my defensiveness and loosened my grip on my righteousness, there's not much hope of it being any different than it was before.
There's such a rich conversation, and I'm particularly benefiting from it in a particular way today, Lizzie, because tonight is the beginning of Yom Kippur in the Jewish calendar, is the great day of remembering but also forgetting, of repair and unfolding into the new. So it's a wonderful conversation to be entering into that. And in fact, this source, this Bachi Ibn Pekuda, I found in one of the big sets of things I've been reading in preparation for this day. And as we end, I'm just left, I meant to say this earlier, but you'll know this. So as someone who holds on to things a lot easily in myself, Davina, who I'm married to, as you know, Lizzie, and have been with for a very long time, she's so brilliant at forgetting when it's called for. And early on in our relationship, we would have some kind of row about something, and then I would be holding on to it for days, hurt for days and days and days. And I'd sort of go to Davina, "Oh, I'm so hurt." And she, "About this?" And she'd say, "About what?" And I'd say, "Oh, about this thing that happened where you know." And she'd say, "Oh, I forgot that about 5 minutes after it happened. Why are you still holding on to it?" And I had never come across anybody before who didn't hold on. And I'm feeling very grateful for the gift of those of us who, when it's called for, when it's really appropriate, will forget.
Yeah.
We'll forget the right kinds of things.
Yeah.
So here's to all of us who forget, and to our practices of intentional practices of remembering and forgetting. And thank you, as always, Lizzie, for being such an excellent, joyful, wise partner in this conversation. So much comes from our sitting face to face and seeing what arises on the in between.
Mm-hmm.
And assuming we remember, which I think we will, we will be back next Sunday at the beginning, towards, I think it might even be the beginning of October 2023, for our 6th birthday. We'll see you then.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Justin.
Bye.